It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. On Capitol Hill, the House voted Thursday to pass a budget rescission bill that would cut the $1.1 billion it set aside for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, or CPB, over the next 2 years. That bill now goes to the Senate.
The CPB was created by Congress in 1967. It is a publicly funded nonprofit corporation that oversees federal grants to over 1,200 public radio stations like Wisconsin Public Radio and more than 300 public television stations like PBS Wisconsin.
PBS Wisconsin and WPR are services of UW-Madison's Division of Public Media and the Educational Communications Board, an independent state agency.
According to a statement yesterday evening, PBS Wisconsin and WPR together received about $5.7 million in CPB funding for the federal fiscal year 2025. We learned that represents just over 10% of the overall budget. Specifically, WPR's portion from the CPB amounts to about 6% of its revenue. David Folkenflik is following this issue closely. He is the media correspondent for NPR. David, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Can you walk us through the mechanics of how a rescission bill like this is actually working? What happens to the money that was budgeted for the CPB?
Sure. This hasn't been done in a generation. What happens is a president sends a request, a formal request to Congress, and that then Congress has 45 work days to affirmatively pass what the president is requesting. And this is taking back money that has already been approved by Congress. In this case, in this sort of overall catch-up spending act that was passed early this spring, both Republican-led houses of Congress passed funding for public broadcasting for the next two fiscal years, that is through the end of September 2027. And funding for public media is done and has been for decades in advance as an effort explicitly under law to insulate it from political pressures from any federal officials, which is an interesting irony given what we're talking about. So the House has passed that in this case. The president asked for over $9 billion to be rescinded. That is $8 point something billion for foreign aid and $1.1 billion for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, most of which, as your listeners may know, is distributed to local public television, public radio stations around the country. And now this goes to the Senate. The Senate has to affirmatively vote to pass this with the same language within 45 days for it by, I believe it's July 18th, according to parliamentarians, for this to take effect.
Okay, then so how does the funding model flow from the CPB to NPR and then down to member stations? Or what does that cascade look like?
To be honest, it sounds like it goes that way, but it mostly doesn't. What happens is they keep a little bit of money for administration in Washington, and then they distribute most of it, overwhelming majority of it, as I said, to public media stations, that is public television, public radio. 75% of it goes to television. A quarter of it goes to radio. Radio was a little bit of an afterthought in the drafting of this legislation. And it's also far less expensive than television. On average, PBS and local TV stations receive about 16% of their budgets from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Again, it's a privately incorporated institution under District of Columbia law, but it was chartered by Congress, as you said, and the federal money does flow through it. On average, approximately 10% of revenues for local radio stations, public radio stations, comes from that same federal taxpayer dollars. And NPR directly only gets roughly 1% each year. But both PBS and NPR get money back from stations for programming fees. So there is some indirect federal funding coming back up through the system from the local stations.
Local stations have been trying to reach constituents, have been trying to talk with lawmakers, have been reaching out to listeners and viewers. But, you know, conservatives have been trying to sever this federal funding grants for decades now. What is different about this moment?
Right. I mean, if you look at this, this was this legislation was passed under LBJ as part of the Great Society. But Richard Nixon was in office when PBS and NPR sprang to life. And he was somebody deeply distrustful, legendarily distrustful and hostile towards the press, which played a role in, of course, exposing the Watergate scandal and some of his other controversial and at times illegal activities under his administration. And there were efforts even in that time, although he did not sign off on them, to try to take away this nascent public radio, public television system. Under the Reagan years, there were efforts. You know, I covered Congress when Newt Gingrich was Speaker. He had brought a wave to of Republicans to power in 1995, and they made it an issue then, and it really intensified under the Tea Party. But it seemed to me back when I was a political reporter that this was something Republicans wanted as an issue rather than as a win. You know, President Trump has placed the media so squarely among his targets for his rhetoric, but also in the second term, really for his actions. Private lawsuits he filed as a private citizen, yes, against CBS and ABC, from which he's gotten one settlement and appears poised to get a second one. His chief broadcast regulator has gone off after every major broadcast network, including NPR and PBS, for investigations, except that owned by Trump's ally Rupert Murdoch, the Fox broadcast network. And you've seen, you know, just a number of efforts to go after media. Well, public media is, you know, one over which the federal government has a lot of influence because of this budgetary tie. And conservatives have argued for decades from the outset, but increasingly in recent years, that somehow that the coverage and programming choices made by NPR and PBS are untethered from the way most Americans experience their lives. And it is biased towards the left. They'll point to, you know, any item of the day, whether it's a coverage of the Israel-Hamas conflict to coverage of domestic politics, to say that it's unbalanced. I will tell you that, you know, journalists working for those outlets and the chief executives of those outlets by and large reject those claims while acknowledging misjudgments or mistakes or stories that didn't land right, or maybe the volume of stories that didn't land perfectly, that they're doing their best to fairly reflect a diverse and growing and polarized nation.
We have NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik with us as we talk about federal cuts pending to public media funding. David, NPR is currently suing the Trump administration over an executive order that sought to stop funding for NPR and PBS. Would this rescission bill circumvent that litigation? What happens?
So Trump issued an executive order to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting saying essentially you've got to stop all funding for NPR and PBS, and that all local public media outlets have to stop sending their funds to the big networks as well. What happens, the Corporation Public Broadcasting basically treated it as though, you know, somebody who runs a local franchise of Pizza Hut down the street had sent the same order. They said the president doesn't have the authority to do it. They're not suing him over it, but NPR is. It wants to ensure that there's some sort of judicial record saying the president doesn't have the authority to meddle in a privately incorporated entity's decisions. And in fact, there are statutory protections all over legislation involving public media saying that no federal official can interfere with public media on, you know, because they are upset about content, and news coverage very much falls into that category. And the Trump administration has clearly signaled from the president on down that he doesn't like the news coverage, really, from NPR and PBS. And that would seem to fall under that protection. NPR wants federal courts to say so and to sort of draw a line and prevent the administration from going further.
Okay, so this passes the House on a very thin margin. What are the prospects for this bill in the Senate?
Well, I got to say, it was fascinating to watch it yesterday in the House. It was won by a two-vote margin. Two Republican lawmakers pretty much at the very end, pretty much after time elapsed, switched their votes to make sure they got over the line. And it appears as though and the final vote, I believe, was cast by Mike Lawler, a Republican from the suburbs of New York. He and one of the two members who switched his vote, you know, have been very upset with the way in which property taxes have been disallowed as a deduction for high-income earners in the New York City suburbs. And, you know, that's been something they've said that they would need support on. So we don't know what they won for their votes, but it appears as though, you know, certainly they were pivotal to that passing. Similarly, in the United States Senate, you know, supporters of public media would have to win 4 Republican votes if Democrats were to all vote in favor. And of course, the Democrats would also have to all show up. There were several members of the Democratic side in the House who didn't yesterday, as well as 3 who have died in this brief tenure in Congress just since they took office in January. In the Senate, you also have elections coming up next year. You look at a couple of figures who might be sympathetic dispositionally, but also look at their constituents. You look at Tom Tillis of North Carolina, sort of mainstream Republican in a state with a Democratic governor, which was hard hit by a hurricane, where Blue Ridge Public Radio really served an amazing service at that time, at that crisis for that western part of North Carolina. You have Susan Collins in Maine, where Maine Public Broadcasting really helps to knit together a state which is really quite rural, mm-hmm. and where, you know, newspapers are struggling to keep heads above water. And she has said she has concerns about the foreign aid part of the bill. The only Republican who's put her head up above the parapet to say she would not support getting rid of funding for public media so far is Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski. Mm-hmm. You know, her fellow Alaskan Senator Dan Sullivan, also Republican, is up for re-election next year. And Alaska really does depend its tribal audiences. Inuit audiences, you know, rural audiences really do rely on public radio, as they do other forms of federal largesse. But there's no clear path at the moment to knowing whether or not that sort of vote would be won.
In just about 10, 15 seconds, is this a crisis moment for local stations?
I think local stations would be hurt even more than public radio and public television, the network level. It'd be very hard, but I think that even if this were to hit just the stations, that would also help to really undermine the system and shake it. This is a pivotal moment for public media, whether you support or oppose the federal funding currently being provided for it.
David, thank you for joining us. Thank you for your time.
You bet.
David Fulkenflik is NPR's media correspondent with us to share the latest on the rescission bill in Congress that would cut the next 2 years of funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The CPB provides important funding for NPR, PBS, and affiliates like WPR and PBS Wisconsin. And to note, WPR senior leaders had no input on this story.